You can get these, take them home, listen over again these messages at home if you so desire, and bring them back to them. But they're there for your use. You can have them and use them at home. And then sometimes when you listen to a thing for the second time, it means a lot more to you. I thought I'd mention that. There's a lot of tapes through there that have been taken when John Mills was here and others. You can have them and listen to them again. Now tonight we continue in Hebrews chapter 11, and we come to another character here, this time by the name of Abraham. And I hope by this time that the verses from chapter 10 are well embedded in all our hearts. Cast not away therefore your confidence, which hath great recompense of reward. Now the just shall live by faith. These are the two things you keep in mind. And we studied first of all how these things worked out in the life of Abel, how they worked out in the life of Enoch, and how these principles were manifested in the life of Noah. Now tonight we're looking at Abraham. With your Bibles open, will you notice the amount of space that's given in Hebrews 11 to this man called Abraham? We begin reading about him at verse 8, and you'll read about him until you come down to the end of verse 19. He gets more space in this chapter than anyone else. Now let's read those few verses then regarding Abraham. By faith Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. And he went out not knowing whither he went. By faith he sojourned in the land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Then at this point, the Spirit of God introduces Abraham's wife, Sarah. Through faith also, Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore sprang there even of one, and him as good as dead, so many as the stars of the sky in multitude, as the sand which is by the seashore innumerable. Now these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. By faith Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac, and he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said that in Isaac shall thy seed be called, counting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from whence also he received him in a figure. I'm sure the Lord will bless to us the reading of these verses. Now it should be quite obvious to all of us here tonight that the Spirit of God, directing the writer of the Epistle to the Hebrews, when he came to the life of Abraham, the man of faith, he simply selects certain incidents in his life. Here in Hebrews 11, it doesn't give us a record of all the life of Abraham, that's obvious. You go way back to the book of Genesis. Abraham is introduced to you really at the end of chapter 11. Although his history begins at the beginning of chapter 12 of Genesis. And you'll read about him right through till you come to chapter 25. So he takes up quite a lengthy portion of the book of Genesis in the historical record. And even there, If you ever take time to study what the book of Genesis has to say about Abraham, you'll come to this conclusion, that there are places in his life that seem blank. Something is said about him, so many years passed over, another thing, and then all of a sudden, another instance. And so even the Spirit of God, in giving us the historical record of the life of Abraham in the book of Genesis, seems to leave spaces, blanks in his life. Now if you stop and examine these things, you'll discover there's a reason for it. But when you come here to chapter 11, there's not a thing said, at least I can't find any. If you can, I'd be glad to know where they are, but I can't find anything in Hebrews 11 that sets forth any deficiencies in the life of faith. It doesn't show us any mistakes, any stumblings, any shortcomings. What the Spirit of God is doing here in Hebrews 11 is choosing out, selecting out these incidents where the man manifested his faith. And that's what's going down here. See, it's life that's lived on the principle of faith. Cast not away therefore your confidence. There's great recompense of rewards. The just shall live his life on the principle of faith. Now notice then how the Spirit of God moves very rapidly from one incident here to another. In verse 8, if we want to learn the first lesson, I suggest here there's the promptness of faith. Notice what it says. By faith Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. You remember that was a very important word last week when we were discussing what is said about Noah. Because Noah, being warned of God of things not seen of yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark. You had his obedience right away. He didn't wait till he felt the drops of rain falling before he started to build his ark. Could have been too late. He obeyed whenever God gave him the instruction. Now here, when you come to Abraham, we're not told that there was any lapse of time at all. Yet when you go back to the book of Genesis, it's rather strange. In chapter 12, now the Lord had said to Abraham, there seems to be, if you take the historical record, it was the Lord of glory who appeared to our father Abraham. You learn that from the book of Genesis and also from Acts chapter 7, the message that was given by Stephen. The Lord of glory appeared to our father Abraham. Now notice, it was not to Abraham's father he appeared. Not to Terah, but to Abraham. And it wasn't to Abraham's nephew Lot, nor Abraham's brothers. It was to Abraham. The God of glory appeared to Abraham. And yet, when he left out of the Chaldees, these came with him. The rest came with him. But they did not go with him into the promised land. They came round what is commonly called the Fertile Crescent. And they traveled a little north and west. And they came to a certain place north of the promised land and they stopped there. But it was Abraham to whom the Lord appeared. But when you come to Hebrews 11 now, it's very plain here he's dealing with Abraham. When he was called to go out into a place which he should have to receive for an inheritance, obeyed. There was promptness. Now, whether he related the message of God to his father and to the rest of them, we're not told. But I think you can surmise quite a lot here. If he told his own family what had happened and God had appeared to him and that he was going, then they decided to go with him. Now, actually speaking, it was a hindrance to him because he was to leave his country and leave his kindred and leave his father's house. But to begin with, he left the country all right. But it was a long time after that to wait till his father died before he went over the boundary line into the promised land. That's not mentioned here. What he's showing us here is life that's lived on the principle of faith, and this is what God takes record of. And so there was the promptness of faith. When God called him, he promptly obeyed. Now, in doing so, he placed his entire future and his well-being in the hands of God. Now, this seemed to be the first test of his faith. I think you'll agree with me that faith must be tested. If faith isn't tested, what good is it? God will always test our faith. Suppose you have silver or gold and it hasn't passed through the fire or through the crucible, how do you know it's purified? Isn't it James that speaks of the testing of our faith? It's a precious thing. And so Abraham's faith had to be tested. And God asked him to leave his country, leave his kindred, leave his father's house. He said, you imagine a man leaving all the amenities of Ur of the Chaldees. Now, don't think that the people who lived in Ur of the Chaldees lived away in the backwoods. The spade and the trowel have shown in recent years that way back in the days of Abraham, when he was in Ur of the Chaldees, it was an advanced form of civilization. They had a lot of amenities. Very difficult for us living in the 20th century to imagine that people way back in these days had modern things, but they had. Remember, even if you go back and consider Egypt, Moses was trained up in all the arts of the Egyptians, the arts of the Egyptians, and many of these arts have been lost. Some of the things that the Egyptians knew then what to do, they don't know how to do it today. And modern civilization doesn't know how to do it. Some of these old arts have been lost. They say that the Chinese were using electric light long before we were civilized. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but that's what they claim. See, a lot of things that we think are modern have only been revived. So in Ur of the Chaldees, they were living in a modern civilization. They had to leave the house and leave all these modern amenities because God says, I want you out. I want you out. And so therefore he obeyed. He put his hand, as it were, in the hand of God, and he stepped out in faith, not knowing where he was going. Now that takes faith. It's all right for a little boy, a little girl, putting their hand in their mom's hand or their dad's hand and following on with their parents. That's all right. Why? They've got confidence in them. They go with them. But you know, he's a full-grown man with a grasp of this world's goods, living with all modern amenities, turns his back on the world and its ways. He puts his hand in God's hand. You just said, where are you going, Abram? I don't know. Well, the folks have said there's something gone wrong with Abraham. What a pity that he should turn like this. Imagine him leaving here and he's going out and he doesn't even know where he's going. But sufficient for Abraham to know this, God was leading. He had his hand in God's hand. Cast not away therefore your confidence, which has great recompense of reward. He was a man who showed confidence in God. He had his faith grounded in the living God, the God of glory who appeared to him. And he moved out. Now, when you move from verse 8 and you come to verses 9 and 10, here I suggest we have the pilgrimage of faith. See what's taken in those two verses. By faith he sojourned in the land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise, dwelling in tabernacles. That is in tents. See, Abraham was only a tent dweller. Now, you don't see many tent dwellers in this part of the world, but I can recall tent dwellers. Of course, Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, they might go out and take their tents with them and things like this when they go scouting, but that's not the thought. I can remember people who lived in tents. We called them tinkers. Here today, gone tomorrow. They had no rights. No voting rights. They didn't pay taxes. You know, that was a wonderful life, huh? They didn't care when they bedded down and they didn't care when they got up. They could go to bed when the light, they could rise when the light. They could pull up their tents and move on. They would arrive there with an old donkey and a little float that had seen better days, or sometimes they're pushing the thing with hands. They would go into some piece of ground near an old dump, erect a tent, start kindling a fire, come round the doors begging, tinkers. Or if there was an election on, you know, they didn't worry about that. It was all the same with them. They didn't pay taxes, didn't pay rent. They just moved from place to place. Nobody's, that's all. Tent dwellers. You see, they weren't settled. Now, if you build a house, you expect to settle down. And if somebody comes and buys a house or builds a house, you expect them to be a resident there. But if someone comes along and pitches an old patchwork tent tonight, you say, well, they're not going to belong here. Either the law will move them on or they'll be moving on. When they've begged around all the doors here, they'll go on. Moving from place to place. Some of you who have visited the Middle East, you have seen those tent dwellers there yet. They still have them, nomads. And they pitch their patchwork tents around the hillside. Abraham was a tent dweller. A man who had come from a modern civilization of that day, and the pilgrimage of faith was this. He left his country with all its material privileges in order to go to another country which God would tell him. And there he lived as a pilgrim and a sojourner. Now, a pilgrim is one who's going home. A sojourner is one who's away from home. And you know, the more you come to think of it, that's what we are in this world. This world is not our home. How often do we sing it? This is not my father's country, so to speak. This is not my home. Heaven is our home. The Lord says, I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I'm coming again to get you, so that I'll take you to be with me, and where I am, there you'll be also. We're pilgrims. We're going home. We're sojourners. We're away from home. That's the reason you often have that truth expressed, that we may be in the world, but we're not of this world. I think I told some of you a number of years ago that I had a great difficulty for many years trying to understand that. You're in the world, but not off the world. I had heard it so often said by certain men, they didn't seem to be able to apply it in a way that I could understand. But the first time I was leaving Britain to come over on a visit to the United States, I learned it. I learned it one afternoon. It was a stormy day. We were supposed to leave Liverpool that Saturday afternoon, but there was a terrific storm. 3 ships sunk that day around the coast of Britain. Our ship couldn't even get out the dock. We had a great difficulty. We were supposed to be left by a certain time. We were there about 1 o'clock in the day, passed through the customs. We were still in the customs sheds at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The man who came in to see us off, Christian man, he was also a man who had to do with shipping. See, it's not what you know these days, it's who you know, and we were with him in the customs shed. And he said, listen, he said, you'll have to get something to eat. He said, let me go and see this fellow down here. And he knew them. And he went along to one of those big officials, explained to him the situation. They had 2 friends here, and they hadn't had anything to eat since 9 o'clock in the morning. And he wanted to take us out to a restaurant in the city of Liverpool, and he wanted to give us a meal. The customs official looked at him. He said, Mr. Bennett, he said, it's more than my job's worth. He says, I understand the position. He said, I would be glad. He said, I know you're honest. I know they're not going to run away. But he said, you see, the position is this. They have passed through here. I have stamped the passport. I've stamped their visa. And he said, you know something? According to the law, they are deemed to be out of the country. We were still in the country. We're just waiting on the boat. We certainly got onto the boat later on that day, but didn't leave till the next day. There we were. We were still there in the country, but legally we were deemed to be out of the country. Plain words. You're here, but you're not of it. We're still in this world, but we're deemed to have our citizenship up there. We're pilgrims. We're strangers. We're sojourners. Passing through, going home, the pilgrimage of faith. You see, faith anticipates another city. He was looking for a city whose builder and maker is God. He had left the city of Ur of the Chaldees behind him. He was looking over to a city that was designed and built by God. That was faith. So all his life, from the time he stepped out, was a pilgrimage of faith. But now, verses 11 and 12 introduces his wife Sarah. Now, if you and I were to go back to the book of Genesis and read the chapters that have to do with this, we might be shocked. He introduces Sarah as producing Isaac. Now, here is the productiveness of faith. There's something not mentioned here. I'm glad it's not mentioned, but you and I learn it from the historical record. You see, there was something that this man had to learn. If he was going to produce anything for God, it had to be produced by faith. Through faith, also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed. Now, it doesn't say that about Hagar. You'll notice Hagar isn't mentioned here at all. Hagar did not produce by faith. Hagar produced in the strength of the flesh. And she produced Ishmael. It's true, Abraham was his father. But he was not the product of faith. He was the product of the flesh. Let's put it like this. Abraham had faith to believe God. God says, Abraham, you will have a seed. You'll have a son. And from you there will arise a great nation. All your seed will be as numerous as the sand upon the seashore and the stars of heaven. And Abraham believed that. And that's the place in the Old Testament where it says Abraham believed God. And it was counted to him for righteousness. That's Genesis 15. A strange thing. While he believed God, he didn't have the patience to wait God's time. That's not mentioned here. That was one of the slips in his life. You see, this is setting forth what he did on the basis of faith. Now, Isaac was not produced in the strength of the flesh. Isaac was produced by faith. And that's the reason Sarah is brought in here. She herself was unable to produce that son. But she believed God. By faith, God gave her the strength. And so Abraham is the father of Isaac, who was the product of faith. But you see, the flesh had to be dead before faith could work. Sarah was beyond the time of producing. So he had to believe God. God says, I'll give you a seed. He believed God and it was counted unto him for righteousness. And when God's time came, he produced Isaac, the son of promise. Now let us apply that to ourselves. It's so easy to try and produce something for God in the energy of the flesh, isn't it? You and I can labor and labor in vain. And all we produce is that which will cause trouble. Ishmael, yes, he caused trouble in Abram's household. He caused trouble when he mocked at Isaac. And his descendants are causing trouble today. We're still having the effects of Ishmael, the product of the flesh. Whereas if he had waited God's time, then acting in faith, he produced Isaac. If what we produce on the basis of faith will stand the test. Stand the test of time. Stand the test of eternity. See, there will come a time when what we produce will be put under the test. That which is the product of the flesh will be like wood, hay, and stubble. It'll be put into the fire, and there it'll be consumed, and you'll have a handful of ashes. That's all. Useless ashes. But what is produced by faith will be like gold, silver, and precious stones, and when it's come through the test, it'll just be purified. That's all. It'll stand the test. Let's see to it then, that like Abraham, there will be that which is produced by faith. But now, look at verses 13 through 16. Here we have the prospect of faith. Speaking of those who descended from Abraham, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now, they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly, wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. The prospect of faith. It's a strange thing when you go back again to the book of Genesis. There's two chapters that lie between the time of Noah and the time of Abraham. From the time that Noah is set on the ark till you come again to Genesis 12 where Abraham is introduced, chapters 10 and 11 of Genesis lie between them. Now, if you were to take time to study those two chapters, you'd discover this, that men turned their back on God. And in the energy of their own wisdom, in the energy of the flesh, they went out to build a city. They were going to build a tremendous city. And right in the center of that city, they were going to have a religious tower. That religious tower would be their gathering center. They would control that city without God. Man was going to build it. He was going to make brick, which is an imitation of stone. He was going to make the brick and he was going to build this great tower. God wasn't in the reckoning at all. Plain words are saying, well, we'll have our own form of religion and God can send his flood and say, like, he'll never reach us, so we're in our tower. And God looked down and said, what's this they're doing? Let's go down and see. And God blew on it. The whole thing collapsed. Ended in confusion. Here was a city built by God, built by man, I should say, and ruined by God. God brought it to smash. You come to chapter 12. Here's a man who turns his back on that which pertains to the world with civilization. And he walks out and he's looking for a new city. A city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Let me say this to all our hearts tonight. The picture that's portrayed to us away back in Genesis 10 and 11 is a prefiguring of what is going to happen to this present age. Man again is seeking to build a great world empire without God. Men have their own ideas of their utopia. They're seeking to build a great system, an economic system, a political system, a world system, if you like, including a world church, without God. And just as Babylon was smashed away back there in the book of Genesis, we find again that Babylon will be smashed when you come to the book of Revelation. Religious Babylon and political Babylon, economic Babylon, come to naught. God will blow on the whole thing. This world is destined to failure and confusion. Let us face it. So therefore we're not looking to world leaders to give us a better world. They can't do it. But we're looking onward to God. The Christian has a great prospect. The prospect of faith is this, a new heaven and a new earth wherein dwelleth righteousness. God is its planner. God is its architect. God will be the builder. We'll see that new Jerusalem coming down out of heaven prepared as a bride for a bride. Yes, we're looking forward. There's the prospect of faith. So that because of this, they continued in faith throughout the whole of life's journey. And you know, they didn't receive the promises. It's been mentioned to us already today regarding this, and I appreciated it. I don't know if you did, but mentioned to the Bible class this morning that while the Thessalonian believers were anticipating the coming of the Lord, He never came in their day and generation. They had to be ready to die, although they were anticipating the coming of the Lord. An old man who died many, many years ago, a faithful old Christian, it was recorded concerning him, they said that every night before he went to bed, he just went over and he drew the drapes aside and he looked up at the sky and said, "All right, Lord, perhaps it will be tonight." And then he'd go to his bed. If he woke up in the morning, he went again to the window and pulled the drapes. He says, "All right, Lord, perhaps it will be today." Well, it didn't happen any night or any day. The day came when he died. He's with the Lord, of course. Moment here and the next moment there. But while we are anticipating the coming of the Lord, and we have the prospect of what lies before us when the Lord comes, we've been thinking of the resurrection, when He comes with trumpet sound and the voice of the archangel, the dead in Christ shall rise. What a prospect! Whether we pass through the article of death or not, or whether we remain alive, whether we are with those that are alive at the time or having gone into the grave, or the body gone to the grave, never mind, when the resurrection morning comes, we're all going up, every believer. The great thing there, the controlling factor is they that are Christ at His coming, going. But the possibility is, you see, that while we've got this great prospect of faith, we may have to die. You can never tell. I may not be here next week. Many a preacher has preached his final service and never got home. I've known men who were preaching. In fact, I tell you, a friend of mine used to say, "Now, if I drop dead before this meeting's finished, just rise to your feet and sing, 'Praise God for whom all blessings flow.'" He says, "I'll not be worried. I'll be with the Lord." Not easy to do that, but there you are. We've to be ready, haven't we? These all died in faith. They hadn't received the promise up to that time, and they just passed on. And with us, they're still waiting for that final day when that promise will be kept in its finality, the prospect of faith. Let us finish on this note, the proving of faith. Abraham's faith was tried in three outstanding ways. We've mentioned one of them. His faith was tested, first of all, when he was called of God to go out, not knowing where he was going, but simply believing God. He put his hand, as it were, in God's hand and stepped out into the dark. Sufficient for him, he was going with God. Faith was tested, not knowing where he was going. It was tested again when he didn't know how. God says, now look, Abraham, I'm going to give you a seed. You'll have a son. Sarah will bear a son. Abraham, as it were, would shake his head and say, well, I don't know how this can happen. Don't you realize that Sarah is now 90 years of age? And I'm 99. And I haven't been given a son yet. God says, I'll give you a son. Abraham didn't know how that could possibly happen, but he believed God. And it was counted to him for righteousness. Cast not away therefore your confidence. The just shall live on the principle of faith. And he believed God when he didn't know how. Let's go a little further. God gave him that son, Isaac. After he received Isaac, he had to cast out the bondwoman with her son. Ishmael had to go and Hagar had to go. Come to the epistle to the Galatians, you'll learn the meaning of that. But now one day God said to him, I want you to do something else, Abraham. That son of yours, your only son, Isaac. That's all you've got left. Now remember the promises God made to him. He said, I want you to take your son and I want you to go on a journey. I want you to go way up to Mount Moriah. I want you to take your son and I want you to offer him up on one of the mountains up there. Well, Abraham might have said, this is awful. I can't understand this. Why? Why should God ask me to offer up my son, my only son? After giving him to me. And if I offer up my son, how can God possibly keep those promises to me? See, God had tested him and he believed God when he didn't know where. He went up. God tested him again and he believed God when he didn't know how. Now God's testing him again. He's going to obey God when he didn't know why. Abraham didn't know. But one thing he did do, he said, it's like this. If God says he wants me to put my son on the altar, I'm going to do it. Because if God allows me to offer my son, it'll be up to God. He'll have to give him back to me again. If he gave him to me already, as from the dead, because Abram said he was dead, so far as the ability to produce was concerned, and so was Sarah. Yet he believed God and they produced. Given strength and by faith to produce. There's the son. That same God who gave us the power to produce Isaac, he'll have to raise him again from the dead if I offer him. So therefore, trust in God. It's up to God. And you know the story. He went up Mount Moriah. By faith Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac. And he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said that in Isaac shall thy seed be called. Here's why he did it. Accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from whence also he received him in figure. He put him in the place of death. He's yours, Lord. You gave him to me, I'm giving him back to you. And just when the knife was raised, God said, it's enough. It's enough. It's an amazing thing. The place where Abraham offered up Isaac is the very place where David made the sacrifice that stopped the plague. The Dome of the Rock. It's really part and parcel of the same hill where Calvary stood. Calvary may be a little higher. Same hill. God said to Abraham, it's enough, Abraham. The knife is thin. He received them back in figure from the dead. When the judgment was falling on Israel and David made his sacrifice there at the Dome of the Rock, the plague was stayed. It's enough. When Christ was crucified on Calvary, he said, finished. It's enough. Complete. Isaac was received back in figure. But Christ went into death. Actually. He died. Isaac only in figure. Christ went into death. No figure with him, it's fact. Buried. But just as Isaac came again in figure from the place of death to receive all the promises, Christ rose again out from amongst the dead to enter into the possession. All things have been committed into his hand. Abraham believed God. My friend, cast not away therefore your confidence. The God of Abraham is still the God we trust today. You can trust him when you don't know where. You can trust him when you don't know how. You can trust him even if you don't know why. You can put your confidence in God, knowing this, that there is great recompense of reward. Cast not away therefore your confidence in God. Let us bow together. Perhaps our brother Herbert Branch will dismiss us with a word of prayer.
Father, thank you for another word today. Thank you for time this morning and time in the night to think that word. Thank you. Look back. Why do we look at the same? Bring there truth. But after to our mind in the day. We thank you and give us joy. We also live our life by faith. Now, Father, we thank thee again for this time here tonight. We thank you for being one to the other out. We ask now that thou wilt go with us in this midst of thy loving kindness, go to our home, watch over us, and turn us back to this place again.
Amen.
First grade after 15 or 20 years in the business, and they don't know any more now than they knew the first year that they were in the business. The crime change. We institutionalize people in physical situations such as that, and here we are trying to practice and deal with people's lives and futures, and we don't know what we're doing in a lot of cases. There's no greater motivating force in the world than a statement by somebody who knows what they're talking about. Know what you do. The individual I submit to you who devotes 1 hour a day to studying this business, to mastering something, can within a 5-year period of time become the greatest expert in this area, perhaps in the world, in one